Well, hello, everybody. We're back again, and it's only too soon. And he is a clinical professor, assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at Albany Medical College, an attending physician in rheumatology at Sunnyview Hospital and Rehabilitation Center in Schenectady. He is Dr. Farber. Welcome to Vox Pop, sir. It's been a long time since you've been on.
Thanks, Alan. It has.
And we very much appreciate your being here. Martin Farber is, again, chief of the section of rheumatology and attending physicians at Ellis Hospital in Schenectady. He's a graduate of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. He completed his internship residency in medicine at Boston City Hospital, is a certified diplomate of the American Board of Internal Medicine with a subspecialty in rheumatology, the National Board of Medical Examiners, and a certified clinical bone densitometrist. What's a densitometrist?
Someone who evaluates bone density studies, DEXAs.
Ah. Well, let me ask you the crucial question that an ignorant person would ask you. What is a rheumatologist anyway?
A rheumatologist is an internist, first of all, as opposed to
I'm the ignorant person, by the way.
No,
should anybody get the wrong idea?
No question is bad to the questioner.
That's what I think.
So I was trained as an internist, and then I went into subspecialty of rheumatology. So a rheumatologist treats autoimmune diseases, different kinds of lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, polymyositis, scleroderma. Those are the things.
What's scleroderma?
Scleroderma is an interesting condition of problem with collagen. So collagen is the protein that holds most of the things that we have together. So your skin is primarily collagen, your bones and your cartilage are primarily collagen. And when the control of the production and destruction of this protein gets out of hand, it gets laid down and it doesn't get broken down. So the skin gets very thick and non-pliable.
Wow.
The blood vessels get thick and non-pliable. The lungs in particular get thick and non-pliable. The kidneys.
That doesn't sound good.
It's not.
And is it a killer?
It is. It certainly can be. There's a spectrum of disease. So some people, it just involves the skin. We call it limited scleroderma. It does not have to involve the internal organs, but when it does, it can be bad.
So, what's hot? Are there new drugs coming out in across the board for rheumatologists that are offering some relief, some help?
Well, not entirely in across the board. I would say that most of the drugs that the drug development we're seeing is directed towards rheumatoid arthritis. So in the last 15 years or so, there are now 8 or 10 what we call biologics. These are really tremendous feats of cell biology and microbiology where having learned how the immune system works, we can specifically target links in the immune system to try to slow down the communication between inflammatory white cells, and they've been game changers for patients with rheumatoid arthritis. Drugs that people may have heard about, seen on ads on TV, are things like Enbrel and Humira and Remicade. Those were the first. Now we have Simponi and Cimzia, and now we're also getting drugs that have different modes of action. Those that I've mentioned affect TNF-alpha, which is a substance that inflammatory white cells make to call in the cavalry. You know, if you have a problem, you have pneumonia, a few white cells bump into it and say, we've got a problem. They make TNF-alpha, attract other white cells, and hopefully they take care of the problem. The issue with the autoimmune inflammatory diseases is that's gotten out of control. For some reason, the white cells think that there's something in the host, the patient, which shouldn't be there. And of course, if you're allergic to a cat, you can leave or take care of the cat. But if the allergen is in yourself, and I'm oversimplifying, but
the more simplified, the better.
But me. I think it works. If the allergen is in yourself and the body keeps trying to get rid of it, you can see how problems can develop. So in addition to TNF-alpha, there are lots of other chemicals we call cytokines, which white cells use to talk to one another. And people have targeted other ones to inhibit, as well as receptors on these white cells to try and block their becoming overactive.
So when they test your, let me give the number once, because I know people understand that they don't get that many chances to talk to a rheumatologist, but 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now, at this moment, are 100%. Okay, so let me ask you, Dr. Farber, so are the white cells, let me just get this straight, there's red cells and white cells, and when you got too many white cells, you got problems?
It's not that you have too many. It's that some segment of them, the group of white cells we call lymphocytes in particular, of which there are then many subsets of that, but they're responsible for immune surveillance. They're bumping into things in your tissues and in your blood many, many billions of times a day. And they have to make these decisions. Is this a virus? Is this a bacteria that I have to get rid of? Or is this something that's part of the host that I can say, okay, I don't have to worry about it? So you can see if this is happening so many times a day, even a very small error can potentially cause a problem.
Yep. Okay. The telephone number again is 1-800-348-2551. Phones are beginning to ring. Let me ask you this, Martin. What is the worst part of your job? What is the worst?
Dealing with insurance companies. Yeah. That's a loaded question.
You have to have people to do that for you, right?
Yeah, you do. You do. And and as they spend more and more of their time having to deal with that, they have less time to do other things.
And how many people in your practice?
I'm just a solo practitioner.
Really?
So I have one office manager who does that very capably. But, you know, there are times, much as I don't like to see that because I'm sort of a egalitarian kind of guy. But sometimes, you know, I have to get on the phone and say, look, this is Dr. Farber, and sometimes I can get places where sometimes she can't. And, you know, sometimes you have to roll up your sleeves and do that.
Insurance companies are there to make some money, I believe. Let's go to Michelle in Chicopee. Okay, Michelle in Chicopee, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Doctor, good. You want to answer that?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. I had a question for you. My mother passed away 7 years ago from scleroderma. And there was a certain amount of time there where nobody could tell her what she had. It took about 5 years to get diagnosed. And then it came about. She took all kinds of, like, you know, exotic treatments, and she tried everything. And at some point, a few years before she passed away, there was a drug that one of the doctors said came out recently, but she was too far past the point of trying that medication. Is that something that's true? Or, you know, I'm just kind of wondering, and it just interests me that you were talking about it, because no one knows what scleroderma is.
Yeah, scleroderma certainly isn't a public health menace. Not a lot of people get it. From a medical point of view, I find scleroderma one of the most frustrating conditions to treat because, unlike a lot of the other autoimmune diseases, we, I think, know least about its origins and we don't have a good armamentarium to treat the basic problem. We do have some things to treat the results of it. So we have better and better drugs to treat the heartburn that people get. We can treat the hypertension that they get when the kidneys are involved. We have some better drugs that treat the pulmonary effects. But, you know, all of them are sort of bailing out the Titanic. We're not doing anything about the ice. Well, you know, we're trying to do stuff about the iceberg, but we don't have really good tools at our disposal now. Some people use a cancer drug called Cytoxan. You know, there are some studies which suggest that can help, but it's not what I would call, you know, a game changer.
Right. She, of course, we didn't know what she had for a really long time. And about 5 years into it, she got diagnosed. And then a couple years later, it kind of subsided. And, you know, she kind of went into a remission. And about 7 years later after that, she all of a sudden, out of nowhere, started having the lung issues. And she couldn't breathe. And it only took about 2 weeks after that for her to pass away. She was taken quite quickly. So she suffered for a long time, then she was kind of in a remission for a few years, and then it attacked her severely, like out of nowhere. We're all pretty surprised. I mean, we knew she was sick.
Okay,
and there was really nothing we could do.
Michelle, we really do feel badly about this, but I have to tell you, we're about to take a break, and then
we'll
come back. Michelle, thank you for sharing with us. Appreciate
thank you.
It. Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. Mary, you stay right there. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you want to talk to Dr. Farber? This is the time to get on that phone right now. Cue up. Here we go.
Support for WAMC comes from Identity Eyewear Albany. Customized eyewear fittings, European frame lines, and more. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYEDentityEyewear.net. New York Electric Motor Service, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in electrical and mechanical apparatus sales and service, a subsidiary of Applied Dynamics, NewYorkElectricMotorService.com. And American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health, AmericanMeditation.org.
We're back with Dr. Martin Farber, the rheumatologist, and entering into the room right now is the producer of this program, Patrick Donjes, and he'll read a question, and Mary from Poughkeepsie will be next. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Hi, doctor. How are you? Ellen on Facebook asks, many dietary supplements and remedies are promoted with claims that they boost or support activity of the immune system. Autoimmune diseases involve excessive inappropriate activity of the immune system. Does this mean that people with autoimmune disease should avoid taking things that claim to strengthen the immune system? And is that why melatonin has a caution on the label that people with autoimmune disease shouldn't take it?
Well, I think you've hit a sensitive topic. I talk to people and they say, well, this is supposed to boost my immune system. I say, well, that's great. Suppose your immune system is working too hard and something that you don't want it to do. So your immune system should be controlled. It should operate appropriately, but boosting it across the board is probably not a great idea. Now, the second question is whether any of these food supplements can do anything along those lines. I think we don't have any real good scientific evidence that they do. And all of these food supplements, if you look at the bottom, says that none of this is FDA approved. Mm-hmm. And any claims that this substance is good for diagnosis or therapy is not substantiated.
Okay, Patrick, very quickly, anybody else wants to send us in something through social media, how do they do it?
Well, they can post comments at the bottom of our show page on the Vox Pop section of the website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop.
But if you're sort of, you know, limited as I am, and you want to get to us real easy, can't you just email us?
I suppose you could.
Yeah, email us at, something like that.
You could email pdonges@wamc.org.
pdonges@wamc.org.
You got it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you,
Patrick. Thanks,
Alan. All right, let's go to Mary in Poughkeepsie. Okay, Mary, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Mary, thanks for your patience. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, no problem. I have two questions, one for myself, one for a friend. The first one is regarding endometriosis and whether it has actually, sometimes they say that it is autoimmune and sometimes they say it's not. And I was wondering if there had been any clarification or decision on that.
Okay, so first thing we need to know, Marty, if we can, is what is endometriosis and then what does it do, and then answer the question.
Endometriosis is really comes under the bailiwick of the gynecologist.
Right.
So it's thickening of the lining of the uterus. And that
migrates too, right?
It can. I guess those cells can fall out of the uterus and seed the peritoneum, the abdominal cavity. If that is autoimmune, I'm not aware of it. It's not something that I've had to treat or to deal with.
And Mary, that's question one. What's question two?
Question two is, a friend of mine has had basically the classic lupus butterfly rash since October. She came down with bronchitis in October, but she had a reaction to the medication because her face swelled up and she had this horrible rash on her face. It has never cleared up. She has seen multiple doctors who have written her upwards of 30 prescriptions at this point, and she's basically just getting passed around from doctor to doctor. She finally has a dermatologist who has stuck with her and has tried to help her quarterback this, but she's just looking for someone to help diagnose her. Even if it does, in the end, even if it is lupus, she wants to try to find the diagnosis. Who can diagnose lupus, and who could quarterback that?
Well, I think the dermatologist can play a major role here. He may need a biopsy of the rash, and he can do some blood work which can suggest the presence of lupus. And if the skin biopsy and the blood work is suggestive, then she should be referred to a rheumatologist.
And very quickly, what is lupus again?
Lupus is a polycystic autoimmune inflammatory disease of unknown etiology. So let me break that down. It's systemic. It's not limited to any one system. It can involve almost any system in the body, with the exception of the liver. It's autoimmune, means that again, that there's been something that's triggered the immune system to recognize something in the person that it thinks shouldn't be there. So it's that. When that happens, lymphocytes, other white cells get stimulated. They stimulate other cells, and this inflammation can affect multiple organs in the body, or just a few organs. It could be limited to the skin, it's hard for us to predict what systems can be involved and how badly. But there is therapy for this, and early diagnosis is key.
And as you mentioned before, it's idiopathic sometimes?
Yeah, idiopathic means that we don't know what triggers it.
We don't know what
it is. We have some suspicions. For instance, a classic story is somebody who gets a bad sunburn. When you get sunburn, you get cell death. The skin cells die, and they release their guts into the circulation. You're not just taking the garbage out to the curb. Dealing with that cellular debris has to be done appropriately, or those proteins can act as triggers to set up an autoimmune response. So when the system can be overwhelmed in that kind of a situation, we think that is a potential trigger, but that's certainly not a trigger for everyone, and everyone who gets a bad sunburn doesn't get lupus.
And what is the classic sign, Marty, of lupus?
Well, the classic sign is the malar or butterfly rash that the caller talked about.
What is a butterfly rash?
Looks like a butterfly across your face.
Across your face?
Yeah, underneath your eyes, across your cheeks. The other thing it looks like is like a wolf. So lupus is
lupus
is Greek or Latin for wolf.
Femme de loup is French.
Yeah, but it was before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at a wolf, they have a different coloration underneath their eyes. So that's where lupus comes from.
Interesting.
Well, Doc, you said that it's that early diagnosis is key, but she has been finding that it often takes years to actually get a definitive diagnosis. So that's kind of problematic.
It is, and that can sometimes be a problem, although a lot of the blood tests are not only sensitive, but they can be overly sensitive. And, sometimes I think we get caught in a trap where we think we get locked into what we think the diagnosis is, and we stop thinking about other possibilities. So if the person or the doctor is thinking, well, this has got to be lupus, but other things don't match up. It, you know, you've got to sort of start from scratch sometimes, maybe with something else, and you're just being led down the garden path.
Mary, we've got a lot of people behind you. We thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. I heard from a guy, doctor, just this weekend, who was mad at me because he said I hang up on him too quickly. And I want to apologize to him and everybody else who thinks. But basically, my feeling is once we hit the major points, that's all we can do, and then we have to move on. But okay, so let's go to, we've got four phones ringing. Let's go to Greg in Saratoga. Okay, Greg, we just talked about the femme de loup, and now you're talking about Renaud.
Yeah. Hi, Doc. My daughter has Raynaud's syndrome, and she moved to Florida to try to help that because her extremities, her hands and her feet turn white and hurt. And even down in Florida, she's down in mid-Florida, it's still an issue. And I was wondering, it seems to have progressed along here. She's about age 35. And what's the treatment and prognosis? She's tried different drugs and dilators and things, and nothing has seemed to be that effective.
Well, for the rest of the audience, Raynaud's is a condition where the blood vessels in the digits, the fingers and toes, become overly sensitive, usually to cold, but it can also be triggered by emotions, and they clamp down so vigorously that it looks as though you've just dipped your finger in whitewash. The fingers really just blanch. It is limited to the fingers. If you go out in the cold and your hands turn white, that's normal shunting of blood to preserve heat. But this is not physiologic. This is potentially pathologic. Now, Raynaud's can be associated with a number of different rheumatic diseases, including rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and polymyositis. So, you know, one of the big things would be to make sure that her Raynaud's is not associated with an underlying condition. And going,
she's had those tests. Yeah, she's had the test for lupus that came back negative.
Okay, so that's good. And she doesn't smoke?
No.
Okay. So there, you know, there are a number of calcium channel blockers, which are antihypertensives that cause the blood vessels to relax. And it sounds like she's been with that. There's nothing really new in terms of drugs, but there are some different ways of applying that. So you can take nifedipine and make it into a paste and put it right on the fingers. And I've had some good luck with that. And if she hasn't tried that, that's something that she might be able to try. There are much more powerful things which are delivered intravenously, but we save those only for people who are, you know, just about to lose their fingers.
Yeah.
But this nifedipine ointment, which is a calcium channel blocker, or nitroglycerin ointment, you can try either of those, and that can be helpful. And that's a little bit out of the box.
Greg from Saratoga, five phones ringing. Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Bye. Let's go to Richard in Queensbury. Richard in Queensbury, you're on.
Yes. Okay. I'm wondering if you've heard of the term leaky gut syndrome and how it relates to allergies. I've had food allergies for a long time, and is there something that could be treated somehow, and who would be the best type of doctor to do that?
Yeah, I'd really have to take a pass on that. I have heard of leaky gut syndrome, but I would have to pass that on to the gastroenterologist.
Okay.
I would add that even though a lot of the things that rheumatologist deals with are autoimmune problems are not limited to rheumatology. As we've gotten to learn more about conditions, almost all of the subspecialties have their own autoimmune conditions. So gastroenterologists have Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Neurologists have MS.
MS.
Multiple sclerosis, yeah. Et cetera.
Yeah. Hey, Richard,
thanks for
the call. You know what to go, where to go, or just hang on till we get a gastroenterologist on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Okay, that leaves one free phone open. We'll go to Hildy in Sandersfield. Hi, Hildy. How are things up there in the hills?
Hi, thank you. There's still snow up here, but the sun is shining. So my brother in his 70s got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis about a year ago, and he's been on methotrexate, which has given him a lot of relief, but the doctor doesn't, I'm a little concerned about being on it for a long period of time and what sorts of tests should be done to look at side effects and so forth. So my question is about methotrexate as a long-term drug. Thank you.
You're welcome. Methotrexate is one of the class of drugs that we call DMARDs, disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. And that name is important because these are a group of drugs that we really believe and studies have shown that can alter the natural course of the disease. So if I gave you ibuprofen or naproxen, even if you felt 100%, we don't have confidence that that's going to alter the course of rheumatoid arthritis, which leads to progressive deformity, destruction, disability of the joints. So methotrexate, and it sounds like your brother has had good results with this, is one of the mainstay drugs. Now, it is an anti-cancer agent. The oncologists use it in higher doses than we do. And it is a powerful drug. But despite that, we've learned how to use it so that I've had people on it literally for decades without any side effects that would force me to take them off the drug. Now, that's not true for everybody. It does have potentially liver problems, and I tend to watch my patients very closely for effects on the liver and the bone marrow. There's no ceiling beyond which you have to say, well, he's a patient that's been on it for so many years or has had so many milligrams that you have to take them off it.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you, Hildy. Have fun up there.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, two free phones. Let's go to Bob in North Egremont. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Hi, Alan.
You're up.
Okay. A couple years ago, I was diagnosed with inclusion body myositis. And the big question I have in my mind is, do I go see a rheumatologist or do I go see a neurologist? This is one of the problems. People who go see rheumatologists are often treated with methotrexate and other medications, and the outcomes are very poor. And if you go to a neurologist, very often they say there is no treatment.
Yes.
Otherwise known as diagnose and adios.
Your observations are right on. Inclusion body myositis, at least to the best of our knowledge now, is not autoimmune, and we try prednisone, we try methotrexate. If it doesn't work, we stop it. We don't just keep doing it. Right. So myositis is an inflammatory disease of muscle, which leads to progressive loss of muscle strength. And what happens is that people do a biopsy of the muscle, and they see these inclusion bodies on electron micrographs. I'm not an expert in this. I don't know how much is known about what's making up those inclusion bodies. Some people seem to respond to the autoimmune kind of therapy like prednisone and methotrexate. I've had a few in my practice who have not. And then it's just trying to support them with appropriate physical therapy. The natural course is very variable. And I think you just have to cross your fingers for the most part and hope for the best, unfortunately.
Well, how is it compared to something like MS?
MS is primarily a neurologic condition that waxes and wanes, and we have effective therapy for that. Mm-hmm. Inclusion body myositis, we don't have off-the-shelf effective therapy.
Bob, what have you done about it?
I've had the muscle biopsy, which pointed to the IBM. Primarily it's physical therapy, I think, that has been the most benefit for me. But I've been tempted to go the route of rheumatologists. I've also considered IVIG.
Yeah, I think any of those are worth a shot. IVIG, stands for IV is intravenous, IG is immunoglobulin. So if you look at the proteins in your blood, you've got albumin, that's like the white of the egg. That's I like to think that it's the structural protein of the blood. And then there's this immunoglobulin fraction, which are basically antibodies. And for reasons which aren't entirely clear, giving people a load of intravenous immunoglobulin can be very helpful in a variety of autoimmune diseases. The neurologists use it to treat polymyositis, which is a myopathy that we know is inflammatory and autoimmune, as opposed to the inclusion body myositis. And I think it's worth doing that. It's worth doing prednisone and methotrexate. But I think before you do any of these things, you have to say, what are my criteria that I'm going to say that the drug is working? And if you give it a chance and you don't meet that, then, you know, then you just stop it and move on to something else.
Right. I mean, that's the problem, is that it's very hard to measure success.
Well, you can follow your CPK, your muscle enzymes, and you can follow your strength.
Hey, Bob, I wish I could give you more time, but we're out, and we'll say hello when we see each other, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break, and then we'll talk to Fran and Mary and Helen and Jane, okay?
Support for WAMC comes from Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley, gastroenterology and urology specialists with offices in Dutchess, Ulster, and Orange counties. PremierMedicalHV.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley, 12 guest rooms with modern amenities and located close to the rail trail and outdoor activities, the1850house.com. And Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, presenting Junior Jumpstart, a visit and tour day for high school juniors on April 27th, msmc.edu.
And we are back. The noted... French producer Patrick Dongé is with us. Patrick.
Hi, Alan.
Would you tell us what is coming over the social media?
Sure. Terry on Facebook asks, Doctor, please comment on the autoimmune aspects of both preeclampsia and psoriasis.
I'm not aware of any autoimmune aspects of preeclampsia, which is a condition that pregnant women get where they start spilling protein in their urine and their blood pressures go up, and it can be life-threatening and fetal-threatening. But patients who have lupus are more at risk for that, but I don't think that it's basically autoimmune. I think it's basically a state of the pregnant state. Psoriasis is a condition where the skin production sort of gets out of control, and this is presumably autoimmune, although it lacks the kind of serologies, the antibodies that we see in rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. About 10% of patients who have psoriasis, which is this, the most common form, are these red angry plaques that form on the skin. Mm. They can be itchy, and you scratch them, and they bleed, and they can be very disfiguring. About 10% of patients who have that get an inflammatory destructive arthritis, which is then called psoriatic arthritis. Usually, these are people who have had psoriasis for a very long period of time, but sometimes you can get an arthritis that we really can't put a name to it, and then 6 months, a year later, a patient will come and say, hey, you know, I've got this red rash on my elbow. What, you know, you make something of that, and psoriasis, and you make the diagnosis in retrospect. And we treat that much the same as we do rheumatoid arthritis.
Well, Doc, we have five phones ringing, but I wanted to ask you very quickly, is there a psychological component to psoriasis?
I think there's a there is a psychological component to almost all of the autoimmune diseases, not as a cause, but as a modulating effect.
Oh, interesting.
So I think there are lots of communications between various parts of our brain and our immune system. Mm. There, Western society is sort of dissected the brain from the body, but I think there's a lot of interplay, and there's no good reason why there shouldn't be interplay. But it's not like I'm depressed and then I develop rheumatoid arthritis. But I think there's interplay and modulating effects.
Okay, great, and thank you, Patrick.
Let's
go to Fran in upstate New York. Fran, go.
Yes. Hi. My question is about rheumatoid arthritis. I've had it now for about 6 years, and I'm on treatments for methotrexate and Plaquenil and prednisone. And the prednisone is kind of the dose goes up as if it flares, and then we bring it down, down, down. And I guess my question is, how long can you continue to do that with prednisone?
Well, yeah, there's no magic number. Prednisone has a lot of potential side effects, which are dose and time related. That is, the longer you're on it, for the more time, the more likely it is that you're going to run into problems. Mm-hmm. But it is invaluable in my practice to keep people functioning. But I use it sort of, I think most rheumatologists use it as a bridge while we're looking for safer, more long-term kinds of therapies.
Right. Okay. And the next question is, at the same time, if I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which again is the immune system attacking just a different part of the body, and then there are drugs for that. Now, all these drugs going on at once, isn't that a danger in and of itself?
I mean, the more drugs you're on for any reason, the more likely it is that you're going to have a problem with them.
Right.
But if you're being treated by a rheumatologist, the rheumatologist and the gastroenterologist have to get together, and there are drugs which can be used to treat both of them.
And how often you raise such an interesting point. How often do they get together? I mean, you know, we all have lots of different doctors, you know, they're all very busy, and they shuffle you in and they shuffle you out. And how often do they pick up the phone and say, let's discuss Fran's case?
Well, I think everybody is different. I try to communicate with patients, primary care docs, and whatever subspecialists who are on the case, even if it's a cardiologist or something that you think might not be immediately relevant. I think all of us need to be aware of what's going on, or disasters can happen.
Fran, you need to insist. Go to your doctors and say, should my gastroenterologist be brought in on this?
Is there a way, we can get maybe one to treat both?
Well, I think you want to have each of them in on it, because the rheumatologist is going to be a little uncomfortable dealing with how things may change with your UC, and certainly vice versa. But they can certainly get together and say, well, here are options. This would be better for my condition. Can you work with this? And I think you need to insist to do that.
Hey, Fran, gotta let you go.
I think I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
That's a very important point, I think. Let's go to Helen in New Lebanon. Helen, you're on.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask the doctor, my husband has had rheumatoid arthritis for a couple of years now, or maybe not even, but he, after being on methotrexate and Remicade for a while, developed actinomycosis. It was very, very sick. It took him a long time to discover what it was he had in his lungs, but that's what it was. And then he had to go off those immune suppressants, and now he's just managed on prednisone and ibuprofen, and he goes to the gym, so he tries very hard, but he does have a lot of trouble with his hands, and how long can this continue? What's the prognosis? Would he ever be able to go back on Remicade or methotrexate, do you think?
Well, I'm not in on his cares, and those are really tough questions. I would certainly, first of all, for the listeners, the caller's husband developed a serious fungal lung infection, which most people don't get. And not so much methotrexate, but Remicade, which is one of the drugs I mentioned earlier, which is a TNF-alpha inhibitor. TNF-alpha is one of those chemicals that the white cells use to talk to one another. So when you knock that out, you make it harder for the body to respond to infection. And the things that we worry most about in our patients who are on these drugs is what happens when they get an infection.
Yeah.
So does this mean that he is going to get an infection if he goes on another one of these drugs? Not necessarily, but people are going to be understandably anxious. On the other hand, if his arthritis is getting progressively worse, you know, then he and you and the doctor have to sit down and say, what are the risks and benefits of my options? And there are other drugs besides the TNF-alpha inhibitors out there now, which have different modes of action, which people may feel more comfortable putting him on in light of his experience with the Remicade.
Yeah, okay, that's good to know. That's
Thank you, Helen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to Edna in Pittsfield. Hi, Edna.
Hi. I have a question. How do you arrive at a diagnosis for PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica?
All right. So polymyalgia rheumatica is an autoimmune inflammatory disease that affects predominantly older people over the age of, let's say, 55. And the classic history is proximal. By proximal, I mean closer to the central part of your body. So shoulders, hips, low back, of morning stiffness. I can't get out of bed. I was okay last week, but now I can't get out of bed. I can't get off the toilet. I can't climb the stairs. I feel stiff and achy, and that is now lasting hours. This is supported by a blood test, a nonspecific blood test called a sedimentation rate or erythrocyte sedimentation rate or ESR. This is a nonspecific indicator of inflammation. Basically, this is a very simple test. I like it because it's tend to be somewhat anti-technologic, but it's you put the patient's blood in a thin tube that's 200 millimeters long. You put it and you just let it sit there for an hour, and the red cells will settle and leave a clear spot above where they've settled out of, and you measure that distance, and that's your ESR. So normally it's roughly half your age, and with PMR, we can see that 80, 90, 100, 120. You treat people with prednisone. Within 24 hours, they feel terrific. It's one of the most rewarding conditions to treat because the response is so immediate. The sedimentation rate plummets, and then you gradually taper them off the prednisone over the course of about a year. It usually does not come back, but sometimes people need long-term low-dose steroids to keep it under control.
Right. Well, you've really educated me about PMR. Second half of that question is my husband had severe headaches and had a temporal
artery biopsy.
Right,
yeah.
Right, which was negative. And they did exactly what you advised.
Yeah,
he had all of those symptoms. Well, I was educated today. Thank you so much.
And Nadir, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, if I can just put in a little plug here as far as education goes, since I'm not on the show here every Monday, listeners can go to the Arthritis Foundation, arthritis.org, and read stuff on the web, get pamphlets. The local chapter's phone number is 456-1203.
They can get 456-1203?
456-1203.
That's right.
Yeah. And they can get information from the office there, and they can volunteer. They can take care of fundraising, take part in fundraising events, et cetera.
1-800-348-2551. Vivian in Amherst. We love when we hear from Amherst. Terrific. Thanks, Vivian.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is something of a repeat of the call you've just had about polymyalgia rheumatica. Are there any alternative treatments to prednisone? And is a year considered long-term? And what sort of side effects should one be concerned about?
A year is long, but it's not terribly long. And the nice thing about polymyalgia is you don't need a whole ton of prednisone. Mm-hmm. So it's treated in a dosage of what we call low dose. You can use methotrexate as a steroid-sparing agent. The literature is controversial about whether it's effective, but mm-hmm. in an individual person, it's worth trying if you're having difficulty getting off the prednisone.
Well, we hear from everybody that prednisone is a great drug in when it's working on you, but it can hurt you in the end.
Yeah, it certainly has a plethora of endocrinologic and metabolic effects. So it increases your risk for diabetes, osteoporosis, cataracts, glaucoma, cardiovascular disease.
And death?
Well, the outcome of any of those things that I mentioned can be death. You know, the
cataracts.
Things can go bad with a surgery, I guess, but osteoporosis.
Yeah.
If you break a bone when you're six, doesn't mean much. But the mortality at 2 years for patients who have fragility fractures, that is fractures from osteoporosis, is 50%.
Wait, say that again.
The mortality in 2 years for patients who have had fragility fractures is 50%.
So if you have a fragility fracture...
If you have a fracture of your... compression fracture of your spine, you break your hip, your humerus, your pelvis, your mortality is about 50%. That is, your mortality is 50% because you're either dead or you're not. But about 50% of that population will not be alive in 2 years.
So, Vivian, do you want to take another shot at this or not?
No, I think that's really helpful. Thank you so much.
And you're Vivian, welcome. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very
thank
much.
Thank you.
We could probably take another call or two here. 1-800-348-2551. Jane in Lee, Massachusetts. Okay, Jane, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to follow up with another question about polymyalgia rheumatica.
Okay. Go for it.
I was diagnosed with PMR in my 40s, which is pretty atypical. The plethora of tests did not seem to be conclusive, and they diagnosed it by putting me on prednisone to watch the reaction, which was dramatic, and it was almost immediately resolved. I was on prednisone for 2 years, and which seems to have precipitated diabetes. There is a history of diabetes in my family, but we do think that prednisone played a role in bringing it on. I'm currently no longer on medication and no longer under the care of a rheumatologist, but I know you said in an answer to an earlier caller that it normally does not return. So what would you anticipate in a patient with this profile?
Well, I would hope that it wouldn't come back. Your observation that you're atypical in terms of your age is true. One of the other things that can happen, I don't want to give you nightmares, and and I would say that everything is statistics and probability, and what I would say might happen doesn't mean that it will happen. But sometimes people who have what we think is polymyalgia rheumatica over a period of time morph into something that looks more like rheumatoid arthritis. And if you had very early rheumatoid arthritis, your serologies may well be negative. You would respond to a little bit of prednisone. And frankly, you may never see it again. But that could be an alternative explanation, which would solve the problem of your age in that situation.
Okay, thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Jane. Okay, we've got, let's see here. Michael, is it Michael or Michelle? Who's Michael?
Michael.
Okay, Michael, go.
Hey, just a quick question about inguinal hernia and whether there's any option besides surgery.
That's not a rheumatologic problem, but I think surgery is probably the way to go with that.
I did that. I did the surgery.
You do it as well as being executive director here?
No. I did it. I had the surgery on me.
Oh.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's good. It's good.
Yeah, I mean...
Where did you go,
now,
Alan?
Albany Med.
I mean, now they can do that laparoscopically with little instruments. And
little
it's,
mesh.
It's, yeah, it's not...
Because in the middle of the night, if you're ever up watching television, there are these shark lawyers who come on and say, did you use the mesh? Call us immediately. So you got your answer, Michael. We don't know.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again. Yeah, right. very, very quickly to Valerie and Troy. Valerie.
Hello. I have this condition I've had a couple of years where I get these hard bumps under my eyebrows in that area. And they itch, but they don't open up. My doctor sent me to a dermatologist, but they had no idea what it was. So I'm hoping I could get a little information here.
Maybe not.
No, I have to take a pass on that. You know, the doctors didn't design the system. There are lots of things out there that we don't know, and sometimes tincture of time is the best therapy and the best diagnostic test.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what we don't know.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, would you think maybe a neurologist would help? I have no idea who to see about it.
You know, I would go with dermatology still. Maybe a different dermatologist.
Yeah. Well, I've seen two of the PA, and they don't know what it is, and they just focus on my chin that breaks out from time to time.
Yeah. Well, so you've seen the PA?
I've seen two PAs at the same dermatologist.
And so a PA, so have they gone to their boss and say, hey, I don't know what's going on here, boss?
I have no idea.
It's an old Yiddish term, which is gornish. We don't know, you know, nothing with nothing. We don't know.
I think if the PA...
They were more... interested in what they did know about. So they
sure, that's the easy way out.
Valerie, we got to go. We're out of time.
Okay,
have them see your doctor.
Bye. Yeah,
okay, we're out of time. Boy, I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to those left on the line, of which there is Alice from Del Mar. Also like to thank Dr. Martin Farber for joining us today. Underwriting support for Medical Monday comes from the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice. Physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the wonderful, and his hat is on today, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Eric Krupke, Officer Eric Krupke, for answering the phones today. And our producers, Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for some more theme and a news update.